We'll take those in order. I'm going to start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2418. Lori, can you please give us a summary of House Bill 2418?
I can, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2418 adds persons affiliated with certain limited liability companies, partnerships, and corporations to the parties exempt from the real estate licensing law. It has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, and conflict says it's good to go.
Thank you so much. Do we have anyone signed up to testify about House Bill 2418? Thank you, Lori. Greg Nelson, please. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Bonamici, members of the committee. My name is Gregory Nelson. I'm the chair of the Real Estate Legislative Committee for the Real Estate section of the Oregon State Bar. I'm also chair-elect of the section. And I'd like to speak on this bill, which we sponsored.
Thank you.
The bill doesn't really, what the bill really does is clarify the law in this area. The original exceptions that are in the statute now were created before limited liability companies were as popular as they are now, and they weren't included. And basically, it just is intended to allow people to sell their own property for sale by owner without being required to hire a licensed realtor. The bill limits that, and the language that we used in the amended bill is language that the real estate section suggested and approved, so that only certain people within a limited liability company can sell the property, and not every member of a large LLC would be able to do that. It also includes some language about partnerships and corporations that the agency added because the law has changed in those areas, and this further clarifies who can act for those agencies as well. So that's basically it. It'll make it clearer for people what they can and can't do so they don't get into trouble, and easier for the agency to police that area.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Girard.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I have to declare a little bit of a conflict in that I have investments with Sunwest Management that is in bankruptcy, which involves a lot of LLCs.
Right.
And I am extremely frustrated, and I don't want to give any more power to a managing partner than what's on the books already. So this bill, it would give more power to an LLC to buy and sell things without the rest of the stockholders being able to have a say?
Certainly not. This bill has no impact on the relationship between stockholders and members of an LLC and what a managing member can or can't do. All it has to do with is real estate licensing, and it allows a managing member who is acting within their authority and with consent under their agreements to sell the property or post a sign for sale without having to hire a realtor to do it.
Okay. The second point, in reading the bill, I saw that it mentioned a sole owner of an LLC. To my knowledge, there is no such thing.
We have single-member LLCs, and that's what that language is intended to say.
Could you explain that to me? Because I did not know that existed.
There are a number of LLCs that have been created where the LLC is owned by a single individual. So that is the sole member.
I was under the impression you had to have at least two members to form an LLC.
Not true. You can have one.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else here to testify about House Bill 2418? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2418. And I may open a work session when Senator George comes back in the room, but I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2481. Lori, can you please give us a summary of House Bill 2481?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2481 prohibits the agreements for the transfer of real property that impose fees or other consideration upon future transfers of that property. It prohibits servitude on real property that reserves the right to property appreciation, payment, or profit on actual or purported future transfer of the property. It allows certain exceptions to those prohibitions. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and it's good to go with conflicts.
Thank you, Lori. Sean Gillians, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Gillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Thank you for allowing us this time to talk about House Bill 2481A. I have been in to discuss this with your members, but just to give a brief summary of where this came from. Several years ago, we heard about this trend emanating out of Texas, where individuals were imposing private transfer fees on real property, basically similar to a real estate transfer tax, except for it's imposed by a private party. How the typical scenario works is the company would go to a homeowner and say, you can share in the appreciation of your property in perpetuity, or at least for 99 years, and every subsequent sale of your home, even though you no longer own it, 1% of the sales price goes back to you. The kicker for that, of course, is that the company is not doing this for free, and up to 50% of the proceeds would go back to the company for these subsequent sales. So several states have taken the step to prohibit these. We brought this bill forward to Representative Holvey in the interim to talk in his Consumer Protection Committee about prohibiting them, and he was kind enough to introduce this bill. There's several issues that come up with these private transfer fees. One, they have some of the other problems that typical real estate transfer taxes have, in that they raise the cost of housing. But the other things that they have is there's title issues with them when these things are associated with it, and there's also lending issues with banks being willing to loan on properties that have these attached to them. That's the basic overview. The bill will, unfortunately, need another amendment. There were some issues raised about property contributed to LLCs and whether or not we were inadvertently catching them and saying that they couldn't have agreements for getting payment back on that. It mentions joint ventures and partnerships, but didn't mention LLCs. On the House side, we worked very carefully with affordable housing advocates to make sure that the language was right there so that we didn't capture community land trusts or nonprofit co-ops as well. So I think with the amendments that we have coming forward, we'll have a great bill for you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sean. You anticipated my question. I was going to ask what the effect is on the title. Does it show up on a title report? Is it a transfer fee, or how does that work?
They work in various ways. It could show up on the title if they put it in as a deed restriction. And so when they do a title search to see if it's clean, it would show up on that. Another way that they have been imposing them in other states is putting them in the CCNRs of a planned community, and so that would not show up on a title search. And I was shown one particular example of that where it was actually on page 21 of the CCNRs that there was a 1% transfer fee built in every time the homeowner sold their property. And so I think from that perspective, it would be troubling. I had a interesting conversation actually with Senator George earlier today on whether or not this deed restriction was allowing people to actually transfer a full fee simple interest in their property because they had maintained a little chunk. I think the company that originally marketed it would say that they are. I think the American Bar Association in their article raised some significant concerns of whether or not they were.
Thank you. And just to clarify, the amendment that you're working on, does it address the issue about the somebody raised an issue about beach houses and family members sharing an appreciation? Will it address that issue?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. It is modeled after the Florida statute that has a pretty broad exception to make sure that we don't inadvertently capture any of those situations.
Thank you. And then I had one other question. There was a mention that one section of the bill, I believe it was Section 4D, was perhaps intended to cover the notice that was passed in House Bill 3630 in 2008. And is that going to be clarified, or do you think that that's clear?
The new subsection A will cover that very clearly, Madam Chair. in the amendment. And I apologize for not having that to you today. It looked close, like we were going to get that amendment done today. I talked to Legislative Council first thing this morning, but I'll definitely have that to you in the very near future.
Thank you, Sean. Questions? Senator Gerard?
I'm kind of one to always go over the bill. There's some language in here I don't fully understand. Line 8, a servitude. What does a servitude constitute?
Senator Gerard, a servitude is a condition on a property that requires an action to occur on it. I will tell you that the amendment removes that language because there was some concern about what exactly an agreement that imposes a servitude is. The amendment will clarify and use language from ORS Chapter 93 as far as conveyances, and we'll talk about instruments that attach either covenants or declarations on property. So I think
like
you tightened up that language.
I like to read things and be able to figure out what they actually say.
Yeah.
So. We appreciate that, Senator Gerard. Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gerard.
You know, this committee is pretty amazing. Just when I think I've heard it all, something like this comes forward. Just an observation. I was just starting to recover from the whole Stoli issue.
a new one.
You kind of understand how our country got in the fix it's in with this kind of stuff going on.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2481, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2418. And, Lori, would you please give a very brief summary, because Senator Burdick just joined us.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, 2418 adds the persons affiliated with certain limited liability companies, partnerships, and corporations to the parties exempt from the real estate licensing law. In 696.030, there's a long list of exemptions to that law, and these are some additions.
Thank you. And Senator Burdick, we had somebody from the Oregon State Bar testify in support and no opposition.
Yes, I saw them in the audience there. They look familiar from my time on judiciary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2418A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2418A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can we have a roll call vote, please, Sam?
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Gerard?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Bonamici?
Aye. House Bill 2418A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers? Carrie? Senator Rosenbaum?
Sure.
Will you please carry this bill? I close the work session on House Bill 2418. It's nice to have such enthusiastic community. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2613A. And, Lori, can you please give us a summary?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2613A allows a landlord to assess a utility or service charge for water if the landlord provides the water from source owned or operated by the landlord. It prohibits the landlord from charging tenants more for utilities or services than the utilities or service providers charge the landlord. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact, and it's good to go with conflicts.
Thank you. And I know we have at least a couple of people here who are going to testify, but there's a sign-up sheet over there. Thank you, John.
Halfway up here.
Thanks, John. See, we have three people, and what a coincidence. We have three chairs. So if we can get Andrew Ainsworth and John Cameron and John Van Landingham, please.
I'm going to go first in. I'm sure it'll be very short.
Okay.
Chair Von Mucci, members of the committee. My name is Andrew Ainsworth. I'm here on behalf of Representative Peter Buckley. Sorry I can't speak louder today. It's the best I can do right now. So House Bill 2613A comes to you unanimously from your House Consumer Protection Committee on the other side, passed the full House pretty handily as well. Basically addresses an issue in the Myerlin Mobile Home Park in Medford, down Representative Buckley's district. And because of ambiguity between existing statute and commercial rate tariff for the electricity provider down there for the home park, the landlords of Myerlin were being charged the commercial rate by Pacific Power, and they were required to charge their tenants the residential rate, which was higher than the commercial rate. So basically our intent with the bill here is just to clarify the language to make sure that the tenants not getting charged any more than the landlords are. The section that the committee administrator referred to earlier about water, it's paragraph 5. It's located on page 2. That was put in by the PUC over in the House side, and I believe we're going to amend that out so that part will no longer apply. That has nothing to do with our involvement in the bill.
Okay, so just to clarify, Andrew, the landlord was charging the commercial rate, but they were required to charge the residential rate?
The Myerlin landlord was being charged the commercial rate by Pacific Power, and then their tenants who were submetered were required, the landlord was required to charge them the residential rate, which was higher than the commercial rate. Basically, this kind of flew a bit in the face of House Bill 2247-2005, which said that if you're submetered, you can't be charging more to the tenants than you yourself are being charged as the landlord. So this bill just clarifies that language to make sure that this ambiguity doesn't result in the situation anymore.
Thank you, Andrew. Next, John.
Sure.
Go next, John.
Good afternoon, excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Cameron. I'm here representing Myerlin Mobile Home Park, the landlord that gave rise to this legislation. Back in 2005, when the statute last changed, my client attempted to follow the law and apply the same commercial rate at which it was charged by Pacific Corp. Unfortunately, a Pacific Corp rule and the rate schedules applicable to my tenant, my client, specified that the tenants had to be charged the residential rate, regardless of the fact that it was higher than the rate at which we were charged. We took a lawsuit over this from the tenants. We filed a joint petition for declaratory ruling with the PUC, along with Pacific Corp. The PUC ultimately ruled that we had to charge a rate higher than we were charging. This statutory amendment would correct that. It would allow us to revert to what we attempted to first do after the law passed in 2005, and we believe it's sufficiently clear so that Pacific Corp, the landlord, the tenants, and the PUC will all be on the same page in terms of what our tenants are charged. And with that, we're happy to support the bill.
Thank you for the testimony. John?
John Van Landingham, Lane County Legal Aid in Eugene. I wrote the underlying law, which is the problem here, on behalf of the coalition, the Manufactured Housing Landlord Tenant Coalition, for the 2005 session. And the problem reflects the fact that I'm not a utility lawyer, unlike John Cameron, and last paid attention to utility law in 1976 in law school. And so I didn't anticipate, as I wrote it, I did not anticipate that the PUC would make a landlord charge the tenants more than the landlord was being charged by the utility. And in fact, I wrote some explanation to the legislature in which I anticipated just the reverse happening and sort of said, that's fine. So the PUC seized upon that legislative history and said, this is the way it works. Our policy is that if the end user is a residential user, then they pay a residential rate. And even though the statute says the landlord is not to make any money on this, we were trying to make sure that landlords simply passed through the cost they were being charged, and it was not a profit center. That's a goal throughout the submetering statutes. The landlord was stuck in a no-win situation, trying to do the right thing, but the PUC said you can't. The tenants thought the landlord was cheating, so the landlord gets sued by the tenants, and it's a mess. The bill fixes that problem, And we've negotiated this at length between Andrew, John Cameron, me, and Rick Willis from the PUC. So that the underlying bill is just fine. It passed 58-0 in the House. The problem is that at the last minute, the PUC thought they would try to fix another problem, which is, what about well water? So my relim had to do with electricity. You all have paid a lot of attention to water already. Probably, I can see some of you have more than enough. But the well water is not allowed to submeter under the statute as we wrote in 2005. I can explain why. It's complicated. It may well be wrong. It's worth looking at again. But the PUC tried to do an amendment at the last minute in the House side. In one of those moments where you regret it, I looked at the amendment on the witness stand, said it's okay, and it's not. It doesn't work. It's more complicated than that, and the PUC has agreed. They're not here today, but I just talked to them in the hall a minute ago. They've agreed that the Dash 5 amendments that they did that simply have to do with well water should come out. We'll work on it in the interim. Senate Bill 929, which already came through you, passed the Senate yesterday, I understand, will require working on submetering anyway, and the PUC has agreed that we'll work in the interim to figure out what to do with wells. About a quarter of all mobile home parks are watered through wells. I didn't realize it was that big a number. So it's worth figuring out. So we want an amendment. Andrew's fine with an amendment. Doesn't affect John Cameron. And we would like you to authorize an amendment to remove the Dash 5 amendments from the bill.
Thank you, John. Senator Gerard?
Thank you. Actually, I had similar concerns. We passed a bill out that required metering on parks over 200. And by, if I read this right, then they are not allowed to recover their costs for reading the meters by this bill. Is that true?
Senator Bonamici, Senator Gerard, this bill doesn't change that aspect of it in any way, whether a landlord can charge for submetering.
Okay.
The underlying statute that does get at that, and 929 will make the coalition rethink the whole submetering thing and come back to you in 2011. But this bill doesn't affect the question that you just asked.
Okay.
And I expect, Senator, that the coalition will come back in 2011 with some legislation to sort of clarify all the water submetering. Questions? Senator Burdick?
So who got the extra money? Was it the landlord? So is this a case where the landlord, were the people submetered? I don't understand how it worked on the ground.
The mobile home park is a commercial customer of Pacific Corp, mm-hmm. billed at the commercial rate, which is lower than the residential rate. As I said, we attempted to pass on the commercial rate and no more to the tenants, but the PUC and Pacific Corp said, no, you have to charge the residential rate because we want everyone to be charged a uniform rate. We pointed out to the PUC that we had no intention of making a profit, but there was a difference between the cost to my tenant, to my client, and the amount billed to the tenants.
Okay, follow up, Madam Chair. So these weren't individually metered situations. This is where they prorated the...
No, they are individually metered.
So how come the landlord was even in the mix?
Because in the submetering situation, each tenant is billed according to its actual consumption rather than just a prorate allocation based upon... some arbitrary...
Perhaps if I could try to answer it. So I think having spent a lot of time talking about submetering with this committee. So, Senator Burdick, the way it works is that the electricity company, PP&L, runs a line to the park mm-hmm. and bills the landlord, and the landlord runs a line to each space.
Oh, I see.
And there's a submeter on each space. That's unusual, I think, for electricity. We didn't anticipate that when we wrote the law in 2005. We were thinking mostly of water being submetered.
There are two sets of meters. There's a single meter at which we're billed by Pacific Corp, PPL.
Mm-hmm.
And then we own the electric lines throughout the park.
Oh.
And at each residence, there is a meter called a submeter. And each tenant is billed or was billed for its actual consumption at the residential rate.
Okay, so you were an unwilling profit center.
I think that is a very fair statement.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I thought I've heard it all.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2613, and we'll be happy to do what we need to do to get that amendment, and as soon as that comes back, we'll put this back up for consideration. I'll close the... Did I close the public hearing? Go ahead. If I didn't before, I'll close the public hearing on 2613. And that ends our business for today. I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.